Mike thinks news for the week of March 9th. How small can you make this thing anyway? And welcome to Mike Thinks News. I am your host, Mike James. Hey, thank you so much for downloading and listening to the show. You're one of my long-term subscribers. I like to say it. You love to hear it. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate you sticking around and telling your friends, your neighbors, that guy in the grocery store that seems completely oblivious to the fact that he's got his cart right in the flipping middle of the aisle. All about Mike Thinks News and helping the show grow. Hey, if you're new to the show, big welcome to you. Don't forget to head on over to the website, www.mikethinksnews.com, for links to all the stories we talk about. Now, those of you that have been listening to the show for a while are very familiar to what happens at the beginning of the year. We get into March, April, and Mike starts to get excited because it is air show season. So yeah, we'll be heading on out to the air shows over the next couple months. You know, here in Florida, air show season's got to start early because, boy, you get into June and July and you certainly don't want to be outside, at least not on the pavement where the airplanes are. So what do you look forward to during the summer or the spring? You know, I went out and I have fertilized my lawn. I have fixed my screen door that my dog destroyed by running through the part that didn't have a doggy door on it. And I have revamped the filtration system on my air conditioner. I've got it set up, the filter. Man, the filter on my air conditioner in my house, it's like impossible to get to. So I redid it and I got the filter in a new place. Now, that took a little work, but it's going to be worth it. So what about you? When spring comes around, do you start doing stuff? You're not up north where it's still freezing and you don't realize it's spring yet, are you? Oh, I feel sorry for you guys, but hey, it's coming. Have faith. It's coming. There's not really any global warming. You know, we've actually gotten cooler since 1998. It's amazing. You know, people that are real proponents of global warming, and I'll be honest, you know, we don't know if there is global warming or if there isn't global warming. And if there is or isn't, whether man had anything to do with it. Anybody who tells you different is lying to you, or they're just misinformed. But since 1998, it has actually gotten cooler. Now, one of the things I love to hear is when you bring that fact to someone who's one of those real proponents of global warming, oh my gosh, the planet is going to die. They tend to, you know, if they know about that, they say, oh yeah, but that's just a blip. Overall, it's still getting warmer. Well, what am I supposed to do? Dude, that's like saying I got a good grade. Well, that sucks because you steal your overall average. Well, I got a good grade. Anyway, so hey, welcome to the show. Now, I've got a lot of great, great news coming at you. But first, got to take just a minute to talk about our sponsor, GoToMeeting. $300, that's the average cost of a domestic round trip ticket. $49, GoToMeeting's monthly rate. That's right, hundreds of online meetings per month is less than one in-person meeting. With GoToMeeting, hold as many meetings as you want for one flat rate. Free voice over IP and phone conferencing are included. Business travel is a profitability killer, so do more and travel less with GoToMeeting, the award-winning online service brought to you by Citrix. Try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcast. That's gotomeeting.com/podcast for your free trial. And now, on to the news. All right, this first story, you can get it just about anywhere, but let's link up to Technologzer, I don't know how you pronounce this, but I'll link up to it in the show notes, .com. The last will and testament of Circuit City. Yeah, we've talked about it before. You remember I predicted that Circuit City was going to be gone Beck, right about a year ago, I was looking through my my posts and some of the things. And about a year ago, I was posting on Twitter and things that Circuit City was, you know, pretty much not going to last much longer. And of course, unfortunately, I was right. And I say unfortunately because, you know, it doesn't do anybody any good when a major electronics retailer that's been around for a while goes out of business, even though, admittedly, Circuit City had some real problems. They had an identity problem. They, in essence, had a management problem. They just didn't know who they were, who they wanted to be. And when they made changes, they made the wrong ones, as evidenced by the outcome. But it's an interesting take on exactly what was going on in the last days. You know, my Circuit City, I did go ahead and visit it about a week before the final days. I think there were 8 days left when I visited it. And it was pretty bare bones. I mean, you could still get yourself a $40 USB cable, 60% off, still four times the price you should pay for it. You know, figure why they're still there. There were a couple TVs still there, but a lot of floor model stuff and a lot of items that just no one's going to want. So, you know, come read this. It's an interesting story. It's an interesting take on exactly what it looked like. I'm actually impressed that the liquidators actually squoze as much money out of the absolute crappy stuff as they did, because the prices never really got that good, in my opinion. You know, you always got to be careful when you have these liquidation sales, because initially the prices are actually probably higher. They just look better because of all the bright colors and those closeout banners. But Circuit City, even a couple weeks before they closed, they were still only down to about 30 or 40% off. They're already inflated prices. So check it out. Let's head on over to another story here. This is on denofgeek.com, and it's entitled, "What Has the Fox Network Got Against Its Own Sci-Fi Shows?" And, you know, it is such a true story and a true statement. Now, if you're not familiar, Fox has a long history with those of us who really enjoy sci-fi of being just terrible. They will come out with some great sci-fi show and absolutely destroy it. Now, one way or the other, they ruin more sci-fi shows than most other networks have even thought about running. Now, Fox's big claim to fame, of course, was The X-Files. The X-Files, which initially didn't have that great of ratings, in its second season really picked up steam, and it became just a juggernaut. I forget, it went like 10 or 11 seasons. It was absolutely amazing. The last season and a half, not so much. But for the most part, The X-Files was just a fun show. And, you know, when you look back at it, yeah, it was campy. Yeah, it was a little silly. It had some overarching plots that they kind of dangled in front of you and then never went anywhere serious with. But it was still a fun show. But let's take a look at what they're doing to recent shows. You know, I'm a big sci-fi fan. And one of the things they do, you remember Firefly? Do you remember how they played those episodes out of order? Yeah, they did the same thing to Fringe. Fringe is a great new show. It took a while to get good, but it has started to really take off. So they played a couple episodes out of order, which really drives you crazy because the continuity just goes right out the window. But you would think after the debacle that occurred on 24 when they broke up 24 season, do you remember that a couple of years back? They had 24 on and then they took like a 4 or 5 week break and their ratings dropped in half. Hey, guess what? That a show like Fringe, which does have an overarching continuing plot, you get to show number 14 in the season and they give it like a 6 week break. They are just trying to kill it. And as if that wasn't bad enough, they're taking Sarah Connor Chronicles and Dollhouse and they put them on Fridays. Just in case you're not familiar, Fridays is, as the article correctly puts it, where TV shows go to die. Guess what night Star Trek was on when it was on network TV? That's right, Fridays. So it's a great article. I'll link up to it in the show notes over at MikeThinksNews.com. Now, don't forget, you can tell me what you think about all this by sending me an email at MikeThinks@gmail.com or calling the voicemail hotline at 347-BUG-MIKE. That's 347-284-6453. I do have one other story here off of Engadget, and this is just the stupidest things catch my eye. You have got to see this amazing magical toothbrush. It's the Brush and Rinse Magical Toothbrush. And what it does is it's a regular toothbrush, but they've made the top of the toothbrush where the, you know, the opposite end of the bristles a little bit concave with a curve that is perfect for flipping water out of the, you know, when the water comes down out of your nozzle in your sink, it flips it up into a little gentle arc so that you can, you know, just bend over a little and, you know, get a little water and rinse your mouth. Why hasn't anybody done this? But you got to go check this out. It is probably the neatest thing I've seen in a long time. Now let's move on to a little unusual news. All right, this first story here comes off of Wired.com. Have you bought a lot of music lately? You know, a lot of people have. You know, it's as they've gotten away from the digital rights management on music, it's becoming more and more attractive to buy more and more music. But what is going on with album cover art? How many of you are old enough or at least have seen old album covers? You know, back in the 60s and 70s, album cover art was just amazing. It was a large part of the experience of buying an album. You know, albums are huge things. They're like, you know, 10 inches or so. I don't know exactly how big they are, but, you know, 10, 12 inches, you know, across. Big, big pieces of artwork. And some of them had some real unique things. I remember my parents had a Led Zeppelin album that was predominantly black and white and had a big Zeppelin on it, go figure. But it had like a spin wheel that you could turn. And I've seen, there's one that I know has a big zipper. It's amazing the things that used to go on with album art. When we went to CDs, of course, album art suddenly shrunk. You know, same thing with cassettes, but with CDs, you know, it became much more popular to buy what you're going to keep on the CD and not get the vinyl record anymore. And so suddenly you got like a quarter of the size. Now, we're all buying stuff digital. Now your album art is down to 320 by 200 pixels or something. This article kind of implies that, well, it just makes it more challenging for the artist, but now you're not going to have the same thing you used to have. You know, the album cover used to be a really, really different experience. Now, I think that as we get more and more into the digital age and as displays become better and better, I think it's going to take a reversal, and eventually we'll have very small displays with very high resolution so that when you're looking at it on your big screen at home, you'll have a big kind of album cover looking thing. And yeah, when it's on your little portable player, it'll be smaller, but at least you won't lose as much detail as you do now. You know, you get yourself a little iPod, the new Nano with the, you know, iPod Video or the new iPod Nano with the little screens on it. I've got a Sansa. Yeah, it's, you're not going to get a lot of detail. And I think that is something that we're definitely losing out on. Also, got a story here off of WashingtonPost.com. A woman was denied a gun permit, not because she was a felon, not because it was an assault rifle, but because California didn't like the color of the gun. Now, we're not talking about a gun that's painted bright red or tried to make look like a toy gun. It's just this gun was two-tone metal, and according to California records, they only had approved the gun in gloss metal or green powder finish or something like that. Anyway, they just didn't have this particular color listed on this gun, and they wouldn't let her get a permit for it. So now she has filed a lawsuit saying that they're violating her rights. Now, it's real interesting when you read the article here. You know, one of the contentions of her lawsuit is that the Supreme Court has ruled that you can't make arbitrary decisions and you can't have laws that end up causing arbitrary decisions. They term it nonsensical results. You know, you can't say that this law applies and then it turns out that because of the law, something that should be perfectly okay is not. And, you know, come on, the color of the gun isn't one you have registered. I understand California wants to have their little registration thing and everything, but you couldn't go and make the effort to get this approved? It's silly stuff like this. Wasteful government spending on a lawsuit because they couldn't take the time out just to go ahead and get it approved. Stuff like that'll drive you crazy. let's move on to a little internet news. Now, first, I want to talk about a little internet news that I had myself. I actually talked to someone that was at 30,000 feet in the air on their computer over VoIP. That's right. Brian Brushwood, you might know him. He does that show Scam School over on Revision 3. He's a magician, comedian guy. He's funny. And we were talking over VoIP while he was on his computer at 30,000 feet. Absolutely amazing. Who'da thunk it? But now let's move on to our first story here off of Eric Goldman's blog. It's all about the right of first sale. And I'm not going to go real heavy into this. We've talked about this before, but there's a real interesting article about a lawsuit that Mary Kay Cosmetics has against one of its former suppliers. And what's happening, of course, this former supplier is no longer a supplier of Mary Kay. But when she went to offload some of her additional Mary Kay Cosmetics that she could no longer use because she wasn't a supplier anymore, she found that there was a real demand for them when she sold them on eBay, and other people started, you know, selling their Mary Kay stuff that they couldn't get rid of to her, and then she'd resell it at a slight profit. Well, there's been a couple goings on, and long story short, despite making many concessions to Mary Kay Cosmetics, including removing any reference to Mary Kay from her website, they're still going to go ahead, and when I say reference, I mean she used to be called like Mary Kay for Less or something, but they're still going to go ahead and sue her, and I think they're just going to have to hash this out in court. But the interesting twist on this is that Mary Kay has kind of made this problem for themselves. You know, there's a lot of stories going on in the past couple of years about different vendors that are trying to have control over their supply chains, and the internet just isn't real good at that. You know, the internet has kind of opened up the world to everyone. And Mary Kay actually requires its distributors to buy a certain amount of Mary Kay cosmetics every month, even if they haven't sold that much. Well, you can guess what happened. People tend to buy some and they can't sell it, and so they have to buy it again the next month. And if someone gets in a slump, the next thing you know, before they end up not being a Mary Kay representative anymore, they've got 2 or 3 months worth of extra, you know, cosmetics that they never sold. Well, now there's a place for them to sell it, but Mary Kay doesn't like that idea. They made the problem themselves, and now they're suing because someone else wants to sell their product on their website. And Mary Kay's saying, oh, well, some of it's expired, and it might confuse people, and some of those products we don't make anymore, so we don't want people selling them. Well, who cares if you don't make it anymore? When Ford stopped making the Fiero, am I no longer allowed to sell my Fiero to somebody? Drives me crazy. You got to read this article. It's kind of involved, a little convoluted, but it's real interesting, as most Eric Goldman posts are. Also got a story here off of plagiarismtoday.com. It's about Google's blogging service known as Blogger, B-L-O-G-G-E-R. Go figure. Seems to be a little change in the way that they're operating, and it has got a lot of people upset. You know about the DMCA. You know, we've talked about it here, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And one of the problems is that people tend to misuse takedown notices. You know, they send takedown notices even when they know they shouldn't have the right to take something down, just because they know it'll take it down at least temporarily. Well, what Google and Blogger have started doing is that when they receive these DMCA takedown notices, they're taking things down immediately before even notifying the site owner that they're going to do it, which is a big change because they used to notify you ahead of time and give you a chance to rebut the claim. But then they are refusing to provide a copy of the original takedown notice, basically making it impossible for you to file a counterclaim. Now, a counterclaim is one of the big parts of the DMCA that at least gives you an option when someone sends a takedown notice that is inappropriate. And what's happening is all kinds of people are losing all kinds of information. They're putting up blogs. Someone puts a claim against it, and they're just, you know, Google's just slapping down the whole thing, not notifying, not giving an opportunity to contest the takedown notice. Well, you know what this tells me? This tells me that you need to get your site on your own site and get off of Blogger. Okay. It's one of the things One of the most important things you can do is to own your own site. Now, this does not completely insulate you from this type of problem, but if you own your site, if you don't like the way that your host is dealing with things, you can move it. You know, I've told you I'm in the middle of a move right now, and within the next week or two, it's going to go live, and you're going to see a brand new site for all of my websites. Mike Thinks News, the Megapixel Podcast, Let's Watch Movies, all my websites are going to be into one site, and you're going to be able to go to any of them you want. You can, you know, subscribe to one or all of them. But I moved it to a new server, and I did that because I didn't like the way my service provider was treating me. You know, when you're on a service like Blogger, you don't have that option. So if you're going to start a site, if you're going to start a blog, do yourself a favor, register your own domain name, get a host, and if you don't like what they do, change. Now, let's move on to a little science news. All right, now this story is off of LiveScience.com, and it's entitled Why People Don't Heed Tornado Warnings. And the story kind of meanders around a little bit, but it does have an interesting, you know, crux. And that is that a lot of times people die or are injured because they don't heed warnings that are given well in advance. You know, if you're in tornado country, you know, here in Florida, we get tornadoes, but it's very rare to get big tornadoes. Most of the tornadoes we get here tend to be small, and they don't really do a lot of damage overall, considering. I mean, unfortunately, people die every year, but it's not like some places where tornadoes come through and just tear, you know, huge swaths through towns, and you get dozens of tornadoes every month during a tornado season in the same area. It's not like that. Well, in these areas, of course, they have tornado warnings, they have sirens, they have all kinds of things, but people tend to ignore them. And the question is, why? Well, I bet you can guess why. One of the main reasons is people have the won't happen to me syndrome. That's one of the main reasons. And I think we all knew that was the case. But there is an interesting second reason. And I found this fascinating. People don't want to believe the tornado warning is actually in their area until they see the tornado. Now, by the time you see the tornado, if you're in an area that isn't safe, little too late. You know, if you're in a house and you have a basement or a storm cellar, yeah, great. You see the tornado, you run down to the storm cellar. Hopefully you have plenty of time. You're living in a mobile home park or in a home that doesn't have an adequate tornado shelter. By the time you see the funnel, might be too late. So, you know, it amazes me. We have the same thing here in Florida with hurricanes. You know, hurricanes, you know, you could say you get days and days notice, but you really don't. You get about 12 hours notice, maybe 24 hours, depending on the situation, of when you probably should evacuate, because you never know where the things are going to go. And it is a problem where if you are in a high probability area where you're, you know, in other words, an area where you believe the hurricane's actually going to go and you're in danger, you're right on the coast, you have to leave before there's even a 50-50 chance of it hitting you. And that causes problems because a lot of people stick around, and then by the time they want to leave, so does everyone else, and the roads are jammed and people end up not getting out. And some people end up staying, and oh, it's just terrible. But it's an amazing part of human nature that we want so much to be optimistic that we'll actually, you know, put our lives and our families' lives at risk instead of taking the 15 or 20 minutes out of our lives and heading down to the shelter. Oh, well, you know, hopefully all of you listen to the tornado warnings because we want you back. Now, let's move on to a little technology news. All right, well, you know, this is one of my favorite parts of the show when I get to talk about the geeky tech news. And this first story comes off Torrent Freak, and it's all about theaters and what they're doing to try to prevent people filming movies. Now, we've talked about this a little before. In fact, the article touches on the story of the girl who took a couple, you know, 20-second clip of, I believe it was the Terminator movie, just so she could send it to her 13-year-old brother to try to encourage him to come see the movie. You know, in the theater, had her arrested, and then she couldn't go to the theater for a year. So, I don't, you know, absolutely crazy stuff. you know, someone, if someone's taken film with their cell phone camera, unless it's a cell phone camera I'm not familiar with, yeah, it doesn't represent much of a threat to your income, movie theater people. But, you know, theater owners are very aware of the problem of piracy. And one of the things that a lot of theater owners have done is they're given rewards anytime someone is convicted of piracy. You know, of course, that reward is given out by the film industry. So, you know, they do all kinds of things to try to prevent it, though. One of the things they do is they go into theaters with night vision goggles. And I always found this kind of distasteful. You know, you go in there, we're watching the film, and we can't really see you because we're looking at a bright screen and you're down there in the front. And you're looking at everybody, and, you know, it's not that you expect to be private, but there's just something a little weird about you looking at everything as if it was day in a dark theater. The other problem I have is some theaters have actually taken it upon themselves to put in metal detectors and things like that. You know, when you start treating people like criminals, you're going to lose your audience. And that will happen, whether they want to believe it or not. But the interesting article here has an interesting idea. There's a new technology that claims it can tell you what seat a movie was recorded from based on subtle audio cues that are mixed into the sound effects on the movie. And it's completely transparent. You're not going to notice. It's not going to degrade the audio quality, but they can say they can come within about 44 centimeters, which is pretty darn close. That's within about a half a seat or so. So you might be off by half a seat, one seat one way or the other, but you're going to be pretty darn close. My question is, in order for this to work, great, so you know what seat it was filmed from, and because of the watermarking, you probably tell, you know, what day and time, you know, which plane. How do you know who was in that seat? Are you going to take ID from everybody? It's an interesting technology, but I think it's looking at the wrong problem. And the problem is, people need to be trusted. You need to just take normal precautions. You see somebody filming the movie, arrest them, prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law, but don't start doing this silly stuff. I mean, yeah, if I go to the theater and you start telling me that you're going to take my picture and compare it against a database, that way we know where you're, I don't know if I want to go there anymore. Or are they doing it already? Who knows? But anyway, that's what I think. Tell me what you think. Send me an email, mikethinks@gmail.com, or you can call that voicemail hotline at 347-BUG-MIKE. Now for our last story of the night. Just how small does this thing have to be? This comes off of Wired.com. It's all about the new iPod Shuffle. Have you heard about it? One of the new features they're touting is that it will actually read you the song title and your playlist. So you don't have to, you know, there's no screen because it's, you know, the little itty bitty shuffle. But they've made it so small that there's not even buttons on the thing. The only button on it is the on-off shuffle button. All the volume controls and everything have moved to the headset, so you pretty much have to have the headset made by Apple so that you can move forward or back a track until third-party headsets come out. Pretty brilliant move by Apple, huh? Yeah, that's right. A little money there for them. I'd never buy one of these. How small do you need to make your MP3 player? Honestly, I have a SanDisk Sansa. It's about, I'd say, 3 inches by 1.25 inches or 1.5 inches. You know how big a Sansa is. It's about the size of one of those double packs of gum, the big packs of gum, but only it's really thin. That's about as small as I want it. Any smaller, and I'm going to lose a thing in my pocket. Now, I've always thought that the iPod Touch, you know, the iPhone without the phone, is way too big for an MP3 player. But come on, the shuffle, if it gets any smaller, I mean, if I hiccup, I might swallow the thing by accident. What do you think? I am thinking that we've gone a little too far. Yeah, it's great to have a 4 GB nano, but do you really need something this absolutely tiny? I mean, the earbuds are almost as big as the flippant. I'm at a loss for why people are so enthralled with making technology and gadgets so small. Thin, fine. Small, there's a limit. You know, I have fingers. I like to use them. We've gone from small to tiny to absolutely absurd. That's what I think. Tell me what you think. Call that voicemail hotline, 347-BUG-MIKE. That's all the time we have today. Really appreciate you downloading and listening to the show. Tell your friends about it. Till next week, I'm Mike James, and I hope everyone has a good one.